Hello.
And even if you come around
to... Good morning, everyone. Welcome to day 4. Could you please take your seats? Every day you guys get harder and harder to wrangle. All right. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Today's going to be a really fun day. Guaranteed not to be boring. I have a couple of announcements. I have to find my... I promised Mary I would read the health and safety briefing every morning. There might be someone who's crept in who hasn't been here before and hasn't heard it. Tonight's dinner will be at 7 p.m., not 6 p.m. It will be in this room. So the hotel needs to reset, make sure you take everything with you today when you leave, because the room will be completely reset, and then for tomorrow morning it will be completely reset back the way it is now, more or less. So please, 7 p.m., tell all your friends who aren't here. All right, let me find my health and safety briefing. Got it. Emergency evacuation. In the case of an emergency evacuation, an alarm will sound. Please follow the directions of our staff who will direct guests to the appropriate exits. There are 2 exits in Aucklander, one through entry point and one to the side behind the presenter's lectern. Please do not use lifts when evacuation is in process. Guests will be guided to the nearest assembly point, either at the forefront of the hotel, lobby, car park, or the Vincent Street entrance. Restrooms and toilets. The nearest restrooms are located off the main lobby. As you are exiting Aucklander, turn right. Men's restrooms are located to the left, women's restrooms to the right. Smoking area. Smoking is prohibited inside the hotel. The allocated smoking area is located on our atrium lounge level, off level 1. First aid. If the circumstances arise that a guest requires first aid, please advise our staff for assistance. First aid kits are located in our lobby reception and each of our food and beverage outlets. The end. All right, any other announcements? Maria needs a microphone, please.
Number 1. Okay. Good morning, everyone. I've got a couple of announcements. it's not that I'm trying to get rid of you all or anything, but tomorrow, for those of you who have to check out, you can bring your bags in to the Aucklander room if you wish. Stay to the wall on your right, come along in a little ways, and then stack them there. It would be easier for you to find them when you have to leave. Number 2, one of the attendees who has been at our assembly, general assembly, has tested positive yesterday for COVID. So if people want masks or they wish to do a test, we have masks and tests on the registration desk outside, and you all know where that is. And Judy's mentioned that the official dinner will start at 7 o'clock instead of 6 o'clock. Now, the thing I'm sure you all want to know is the menu for today. So the morning tea, there's tea and coffee, there's a vanilla and chocolate eclair, and it's vegan. For the lunch, the main item is hot smoked salmon wrap with horseradish, cream, capers, crispy iceberg lettuce, and red onion. The snack option is crisps, salt and vinegar. Mm. And I've tried to swap these with other people and you can't because it's the only one there is. The sweet item is coffee slice, vegan, and you've got a whole fresh fruit, the bottled water, and the juice. The afternoon tea, tea and coffee and sausage rolls, and it's got yay at the end. Not sure why. Do people want to know the dinner menu now, or shall I read it tonight?
Why don't you go ahead and read it now?
Okay, righto. So, the entree is slow-cooked pork belly with crackling crumb, apple aioli and cauliflower, and bacon croquettes, DFO. The main course is New Zealand Canterbury grilled lamb rump, mashed kumara, steamed broccoli, roast parsnip and potato with cider juice, GFO, DGO. And the dessert is pavlova with seasonal fruit and passion fruit glaze, GF. And Judy has requested that one.
I did. Kumara, by the way, no. For the North Americans who may not know, is similar to sweet potato.
So if anyone has any questions, please ask.
It looks
ask
really
now.
Different.
And if not, I'll hand over to Paul because he wants to make an announcement.
Yeah. Well, you said you did.
What about it?
The poster.
Oh, okay. Sorry, yeah. Thanks, folks. For delegates, in your bag, conference bag, you will, amongst all the goodies, and you may not have opened them all yet, but you should have a small parcel. It's kind of, it's called core flute, so I don't know if anybody knows what that means, but it's a packing stuff, and it has a ribbon tied round it, and inside there, you'll find something wrapped in tissue paper, and what it is a glass coaster with an etched book, and in within the etching it says 2 centuries of Braille NZ, brailled by Michelle from a company called Looking Glass, local artist. I bought some glasses last year for people stepping down from a committee, and I had to get them from the States, and they kept me awake all night in case they would arrive in bits for weeks. And they arrived fine, by the way, thanks for asking. But I thought, this is ridiculous, can I get someone local? But actually, Michelle did these by hand. She uses some kind of stuff a bit like chewing gum to place the dots, and then drills each of the dots, she says, somewhere around 25, 30 times. And Braille is lovely. The etchness gives it a different surface. It took me a while. I didn't understand how print people, Leonie will get this one, how print sighted people draw books with a kind of an indent at the spine. It took me a while to. My 9-year-old daughter saw it immediately and went, "That's a book." I went, "What's that funny wee bit there for?" So it's a sighted etching of a book, and in it is Braille. In it is in Braille. It says 2 centuries of Braille NZ, and so it's a small, it's a unique gift from Auckland here for all the delegates present, and it's in your bag. So don't drop it.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Oh, sorry, Judy. I've got one more.
Yes,
I forgot to read the drinks. Menu, do people want to know what drinks are on offer tonight?
Okay.
Okay. So there's soft drinks, fruit juices and water. The wine selection is all Copico Bay by the glass. You get Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Rosé, Pinot Noir and Merlot. The beers are Steinlager Pure, Steinlager Light, Steinlager Zero, and all alcoholic drinks are $12 per item. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. We're going to start this morning with a brief report from our chair of the nominating committee, and then we will elect officers, and then the next president can take over for the rest of the conference.
Thank you very much,
thank you,
Madam
Debbie.
President. I'm pleased to report that I have not received any further nominations from the delegates or from the General National Assembly. So I'm not sure it's my purview to do this, but I believe, and if it's not, somebody please correct me, but I do believe that we can now officially declare the slate elected, unless there's some... think that I'm missing. So
I think
please,
it might be,
Madam President.
I think it might be wise to actually have a motion and a vote. I would be more comfortable with that.
Good.
So I would welcome a motion. Debbie, you can make a motion to elect the slate as distributed.
Madam President, I so move that the ICEBH General Assembly move to elect the proposed nomination slate with the amendment, in addition, that we include the delegate from Nepal.
Yes, thank you. Good.
Can I have a seconder?
Is there a second? Australia seconds. Thank you. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Yeah, you opposed. You come up here. Oh. Thank you. Thank you very much. On behalf of myself and the entire newly elected executive committee, we're very happy to do this and looking forward to the next 4 years. And I can only tell you that I hope the next 4 years will be even better than the last four. Thanks very much, Debbie, for all your hard work on the nominations. I know you guys really, really worked hard on that. So thank you to Debbie, thank you to Leona, and thank you to Mandy. All right. We have an exciting morning for the techies among us, especially, but probably that's most of us now. So we're going to have some short presentations from our presenters, and we're asking these presenters to keep their presentations to about 10 to 15 minutes, and closer to 10, please, if you can, so because we have seven presenters for about 80 minutes, so the division is not great. So, and what I'd like you to do is confine your remarks to what people will be able to see at your table later this morning. If you could just tell us about that, tell us about what you have and any additional information about that, but keep it to what you have that people will be looking at this morning. Okay, all right, we're gonna start with Greg Stilson, I think is gonna be doing this, talking about the Monarch. And the Monarch's been around all week, but it's gonna be around again. So after, I assume we can start looking at these things during coffee break, but it's after coffee break from 10:30 to 12. You can, and if you've seen everything and you wanna go shopping or whatever else you might wanna do, this is just a little bit of downtime that also might be helpful for some people. Okay, Greg, there you go.
Good morning, everybody. Can everybody hear me? Excellent. Everybody get caffeinated? Get your tea and coffee? Excellent. So as Judy said, I'm Greg Stilson. I lead the technology innovation team at the American Printing House for the Blind. And myself and Willow Free are going to kind of split up the presentations today. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Monarch this morning, and she's going to talk about eBraille this afternoon because she's been working with many of you on eBraille, and you don't want me talking about eBraille, so we're going to go with that. How many of you, just with a round of applause, have not seen or heard about the Monarch before? We're doing our marketing well. Okay, that's good. I wanted to just kind of recap what the Monarch is and really our goals behind this project, right? As blind people, we all have had this dream of what has been regarded for many years as the Holy Braille, right? A tool that can do multi-line Braille and tactile graphics on the same surface. And this is not the first time that a company has come out and promised that they've solved this problem, right? I'm sure we've all heard of companies, startups, saying that they've come out with some technology that can solve this issue and that you're going to see it really soon. And then that company runs out of money or can't mass produce it, and we're left starting over and solving the problem again. So APH started this journey back in 2020 to really look at taking a different approach at this project. And so we looked at those who came before us, and one of the things we learned immediately is that this is not a problem that we can solve by ourselves. This requires partnership across the board, And really a tool of this nature is going to belong to the field and not just the company who creates it. And so we took an approach back in 2020 to really partner with as many organizations as we can. We put out a request for information back in 2020 and looked at a ton of different technologies that promised the world. And we ended up partnering with Humanware and the Dot company. Now, Humanware had been working with Dot Incorporated out of South Korea for a number of years to really optimize their Braille Dot. If those of you who remember who had taken a look at the Dot watch back in the 2017, 2018, the Braille was very different and sometimes unreadable. And so Humanware had partnered with Dot to really optimize their pin technology to feel more like the piezoelectric pins that you're used to today. And so we were presented with a technology that, for the first time in my life and in the first time of many of our lives, showed the potential to do multi-line Braille and tactile graphics on the same surface. So as time progressed, we now have a tool that we'll be releasing in September after four of very long years that is capable of rendering 10 lines of 32 Braille cells and rendering tactile graphics with equidistant pins on the same surface. A device like this, you think of the longest single line Braille display today is 80 cells, right? This device has 480 cells in it. We built the software in partnership with Humanware to really solve three problems. The first one is we wanted to produce a mechanism where textbooks could be provided for students faster, cheaper, and more efficiently. So today, you know, I think back to Francis Gentle's comments the other day about producing seventh grade textbooks that were over 50 volumes in length, right? That's a lot of backpack to carry at that point. A tool like this, in combination with the eBraille standard that Will is going to talk to you about later on today, we would be able to get these textbooks transcribed by the transcriber, but then rather than going through the production process of producing, binding, packaging, and shipping these, oftentimes in the U.S. for free matter for the blind, so we end up getting put at the back of the bus, we're going to be able to save countless dollars and time from the time that that book is transcribed to the time that it's delivered to the student. They'll be able to read it in their book reading application, and they'll be able to navigate with all the integrity of formatted Braille, but they'll be able to navigate with the power and efficiency of DAISY or EPUB capabilities. So that's the first one, is being able to solve and improve the distribution of textbooks. The second is working on improving impromptu learning capabilities. So the device is going to be shipping with a number of different applications, and this is more than just a Braille display. It more functions more like a laptop computer than a Braille display. So it has things like a word processor, a tactile graphics viewer, a Desmos-powered graphing calculator that can really, on the fly, create tactile graphics or tactile graphs for you. But most importantly, it's going to have an additional capability that we're building alongside Humanware to be able to build a software development kit so that in the same fashion that software engineers can build apps for iOS or Android, really creative engineers are going to be able to create apps for the Monarch. And this is something that we're going to be able to provide to a number of engineers down the road who are interested in building tactile apps for this tool. So the coolest thing here is that APH has already started building apps using the software development kit. And we created three apps to start. The first one is a startup wizard to be able to gamify how to learn the Monarch, because we're teaching skills that are very different, right? You're learning a multi-line dynamic display that is touch sensitive, so you are able to interact with that display using touch gestures. And these are things that blind students have never done before. So how do you teach kids without them knowing you're teaching them? They play games, right? And so we've created a gamified startup wizard so that the students can learn how to interact with the Monarch while playing a game. The second one that we created is a mechanism to teach what we call the point-and-click gesture, which is a new way of interacting with a Braille display. And we did that in the same way that Microsoft used Solitaire to teach people how to use a mouse. We created the game Tactile Chess for blind students to interact and play the game of chess, but using this point and click gesture so that they master that as well. And the last one with the impromptu learning piece is really today, teachers of the visually impaired or QTVIs, they carry around their Mary Poppins bag of tools to be able to on the fly create tactile graphics when the classroom teacher forgets to provide those ahead of time, right? So they'll go in and they'll find their wiki sticks or their bump-ons and they'll create these tactile graphics on the fly really creatively, right? But one of the tools that we're creating is a method for the TVI to take their smartphone or their tablet, and in real time they can draw a graphic on their display or on their iPad, on their tablet, and in real time it's transferred over to the Monarch's tactile display. And the student can feel what's being drawn, but the teacher can also add Braille labels to that graphic as well. So improving the impromptu learning capability so that learning can continue to happen is absolutely crucial. And I'd say I'd conclude with saying the last goal of this project is really enhancing access to science, technology, engineering, and math subjects, right? The Monarch is going to be built with a word processing Microsoft Word application that can take in Microsoft Word documents that have math created in Microsoft's math editor on the computer. So if a classroom teacher creates an equation and they create math content, the student can open up that Word document, they can read that in UEB Math, they can respond to it in UEB Math and have that converted back into print math for the sighted teacher. And if they need to do graphing functions on a graphing calculator, we have a Desmos-powered graphing calculator that they can utilize as well. So for the first time, I think, in history, the student is going to be able to actually create an equation, create the graph in real time, and then modify that equation to see how that graph changes. The TVI doesn't have to create a separate graph for that kid anymore. So the device weighs approximately, I'm going to say in U.S. style, 4.5 pounds, and is about the size of a gaming laptop. As I said, it has 450 cells, 10 lines of 32 Braille characters, and is a tool that is meant for both content creation and content consumption. And the exciting part is that we've only started. This is the first of its kind, and we are going to see this grow exponentially. We are we're meeting with the folks at NVDA next week to see how we can connect this with additional tools. And JAWS, Apple, and Google will all be following as well. So please come by, take a look at the table. Myself, Peter Cracknell from Quantum, Willow Free, and Ann Lancaster will be there to answer any questions you have. But just super excited for you all to get your hands on it. So thank you very much.
All right, who is here with from Sami Braille? Is someone here? Ah, yes. You are coming. Hello? Yes, you're here. Okay. Hi. Good morning. What is your name?
Yeah, my name is
Mr. Fook is here to talk with you. Thank you. Okay. You can come around.
Thank you. Yeah, good morning, everybody. I'm very happy to be here, and I would like to share with you about our work about the Sami Braille software. I am from the Sami Center for the Blind, a small nonprofit organization based in Vietnam. We began the development of the Sami Braille, we call it SMB, in 2018 with the goal to provide a free unified Braille translation solution for text, images, mathematics, and music. In my quick sharing this morning, I would like to quickly introduce to you four key feature modules alongside with some of its useful utilities to prepare for the final translation process. First, talking about the text module, editing and formatting text with SMB is similar to other mainstream word processors like Microsoft Word. In addition to the styles applied for the print document, there will be corresponding styles applied for the Braille. Various Braille translation rules can be customized to apply for each style. SMB uses the LibLouis library, and currently it enables to support more than 150 different Braille translation tables for text. And the next, for the math module, SMB supports inputting math expressions, importing and exporting between LaTeX and MathML codes. It converts the math expressions to both Braille and speech. We use the MathCat library to provide the speech and Braille output. Currently, it supports the UEB, NIMF, CMU, and Vietnamese Braille math codes. Okay, and next to the third module, that is the image. Besides inserting and displaying images in a print document, like other mainstream word processors, SMB fully supports the process of designing, editing, and converting images into the Braille tactile graphics. We also make this image editing tool available as a standalone application. We call it SoundMy Graphics Editor, SMG, which you can download and use it freely. And come to the fourth module, that is about the music. Due to the complexity of the Braille music translation and formatting principles, developing a high quality Braille music translation engine was truly a challenge. However, our team is very pleased to have made significant progress and released an engine to help convert music scores into Braille with the high accuracy and good formatting, although there are still many things to be improved. SMB translates music XML into Braille. Most mainstream music notation software, such as Finale, MuseScore, or Sibelius, can export music XML files. SMB offers 100 of different translation music translation options and a tool to edit basic score info, making it very flexible and able to meet different users' needs. I also would like to share with you a new music experimental feature of SMB, which we are going to release soon in the next release. That is the music navigation mode. In this mode, users can browse and read music score item by item, measure by measure, in both speech with the screen reader and through the Braille output. We will implement to support the MIDI playback feature in this navigation mode soon. So that is about four key feature modules. Now I just want to mention a few useful utilities. That I think is quite useful for the preparation for the final translation process. You can manage the header and footer contents like setting page numbers. You can find that feature from the view menu. If you want to need to deal with different Braille encodings, it has the Braille encoding converter in the tools menu. If you want to make the document into multiple Braille volumes, you can find the split document tool in the edit menu. Creating a table of contents can be done from insert menu, and many other custom options from the basic to advanced settings. Actually, I have the sample document. It contains all different kind of things like headings, different heading levels, the data table, music equation, math equation, as well as a graphic in the print document. And I already embossed that into Braille by the Summer Braille software. So see you at the table so you can have a look at the Braille output, or you can directly interact with on the computer with some Braille software. Yeah, thank you very much for your attention. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Clovernook folks. I'm not sure who's going to be speaking. Sam?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Tamara, we're going to do 5 minutes apiece.
Okay, you got 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
2 minutes ahead of schedule. Great. Yeah. Can everyone hear me all right? Okay, great. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to an abbreviated version of the program that Tamara and I have been working on together for a couple years now. We did submit a paper, so if you're interested in learning more about the program, feel free to check it out in the packet. In a nutshell, though, at Clovernook, we are primarily known as a Braille producer, of course. We print about 30 million pages a year. We specialize in bulk printing, and we're a longtime member of BANA. But in the last 10 years or so, we've been launching our own programs that gear around other types of accessibility when it comes to information and experience, particularly kind of outside of the libraries that we've typically just provided for. So this started with our arts initiative that works with museums and cultural centers, and I've actually got lots of goodies on the table over there that are from our arts program from a prior presentation I gave while on this trip, so feel free to check some of those out. But through that work, and especially through the work of turning kind of two-dimensional objects into three-dimensional representations, we started thinking about how we could apply this form of 3D representation of illustrations or paintings or drawings to books, where traditionally we've just inserted transcriber's notes or at the most done a two-dimensional graphic on swell touch or embossed paper. So we launched this program that we refer to as our Tactile Literacy Initiative with a couple different titles, and it's primarily focused outside of the US. So we wanted to use the opportunities that the Marrakesh Treaty provided us to print and produce books in other languages for other markets and spaces where they don't have as robust access to materials as we do in the US, thanks to the National Library Service and other entities. So we redesigned our print Braille books, and these are culturally relevant storybooks. And we looked at the illustrations and we started turning them into models. Now, a lot of these models were available through online repositories. Some of them necessitated original design, but where things really took off is when we realized how we could utilize the local educational institutions to really ramp up the work. So Tamara and I have been working together for a number of years now, utilizing her students to essentially be working on 10, 15, 20 books at a time and create a pool of projects for us to evaluate. And it's a great way to really exponentially grow the database of titles and model kits that are available. Since we have been working together, we've also started to explore the development of standalone kits. We've done a number of needs assessments at schools when it comes to 3D resources. And a lot of science and math and geography supports were repeatedly identified both domestically and internationally. So a moving focus for this program is the standalone development and design of 3D models that support those various subjects in the most universal application possible. So trying to identify models that teachers in Kenya and Rwanda are requesting, but as are TVIs in the US and Canada, with the end result being free to download, free to print models that are hosted online for local spaces, schools, educational centers to be able to download and print. So on the table, in addition to our arts examples, we do have two examples of print braille books that students developed along with the models that they provided. So you'll see how college students who are kind of working with a book and looking at illustrations are able to start to think about how those can be illustrated in a way that or that provides some tactile meaning to students. So I want to pass things over now to Tamara, who's going to talk a little bit about how the university side has worked and how her students have benefited from this collaboration.
Hello, I'm Tamara O'Callaghan, and I'm a professor of English at Northern Kentucky University. So let me start by acknowledging that I'm the outlier here. I do not know Braille. I'm actually a medievalist. I specialize in working with medieval manuscripts and early printed books. And I'm also a digital humanist. I work a lot with augmented reality. I've worked on creating a teaching text of Chaucer's General Prologue using augmented reality, creating a 3D model of Canterbury Cathedral that you can take the roof on and off and sort of move inside. And I also work with eye tracking software to examine how people read the medieval manuscript page. So to sort of explain how I've gotten involved in this, because it seems rather strange, I was tapped by our new dean of the Honors College to teach what's called the general education courses. It's sort of hard to explain to people outside of the US, but just think of them as breadth courses for a cohort of students who were in STEM and particularly in computer science. I was supposed to give them some courses on humanities and the arts that would interest them. And, you know, as my colleagues who I know well in computer science, because I work in the digital humanities, have told me, we want them to get out of their parents' basements where they're coding all day long and all night long. So I said, sure, I would do this, but you had to leave me alone because I wanted to come up with my own course. And I, because of my work with early printed books and with manuscripts, I wanted to do something with book history with them. And so I came up with this idea that our library had just opened a 3D printing and laser cutting makerspace. I wanted to use the space to justify the university's investment in that money with my students and get them out there doing 3D printing, but thinking about a multimodal tactile book. But I didn't really know who for. And I was lucky enough to have a former student who had worked with Clovernook, who said to me, why aren't you working with Clovernook, which is right across the river from me? And I said, what's Clovernook? And she put me in touch with Samuel, and basically that's how the project started. And so my students, who know nothing about working with blind and low vision individuals, anything about Braille, come into my class. They are introduced to the project by myself, by Clovernook. A lot of them have done 3D printing before, but some of them have never done it. They leave my course having done a high-impact practice, project-oriented project, basically, for the course that they can take to their future employers to show how they've worked with user interface, universal design, things like that. And it meets the requirement, both, and to go pick up on our thread about the United States of America, technically Kentucky is not a state, it's a commonwealth, so the requirements of the Commonwealth of Kentucky for their Council of Post-Secondary Education is that undergraduate students graduate with certain skills, and that includes experience with diversity, working in teams, civic engagement, and trying to basically improve their community, for which my university has a strong outreach mission. So my students learn about accessibility. They learn about what's called ICT4D, which is information and communications technologies for developing countries. They learn about social justice and globalism. I can tell you it's been incredibly rewarding at a time post-COVID where many of my colleagues complain that their students aren't showing up for class. My students in this course not only attend every class if they have to miss, they send me an email to tell me they will be in the makerspace to get their print on as soon as possible, as soon as they either are recovered from their sickness or whatever the issue is. They are very excited to hear me report on this assembly. A lot of them have already flagged me on social media because I've been putting up pictures because some of their projects are here. It's been a phenomenal learning experience for them, and my university is really happy with me, which I have to thank everyone for. Because it's really raised my profile. I think a lot, especially my dean and provost, weren't really sure how a medievalist could engage effectively with a community. Since they're both in STEM disciplines, they sort of didn't see that. So yeah, it's been incredibly rewarding working with Clover Nook. And my students are better citizens. They're a generation that want to change the world, and they are very happy working with this project. So if anyone here would like to work with my students, please come and speak to me. I need projects for them to write, projects for them to do 3D printing. If you're willing to Zoom in to my class in the fall, they would welcome. You have to understand, my students are first generation going to university largely. Most of them may not even have been out of the state of Kentucky, so the idea of learning about the world for them is very new, but also very exciting for them. So thank you.
And I just wanted to add one last thing in closing. An added benefit for Clover Nook here has been that we've been able to hire people out of this program. We now have a makerspace coordinator who is a graduate of Northern Kentucky University, thanks to this partnership, as well as several interns. And so we're very much trying to do this as a community. And as Tamara said, if anyone's interested in learning more, please feel free to reach out. Thank you.
I will add, two of my students are now learning Braille. So
yeah, they're taking the transcriber course. Yeah, it's exciting.
Really made a difference for them. That is super.
Thank you, guys. This is very exciting. Good. Thank you. All right. Now Leona Holloway is going to tell us about accessible 3D models and interactive tactile learning tools.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Lovely to speak with you. So I am a member of the Inclusive Technologies team at Monash University in Melbourne, Australia, and we have a team of researchers who are working on projects relating to accessible technology for people with disabilities with an emphasis on blindness and low vision. So I've got a table full of goodies. There was not much space for my clothes coming over here. I had to expand the case to get any clothes in. So I won't tell you everything that's on the table. I'll start with actually talking about some things that I've got from other students. So Ruth Nagasa is a PhD student who is about to complete her studies, and she has given me a 3D model that's in parts of an insect to learn about the parts, and she's developed an app that helps students to interact with their model. It gives audio instructions, you can talk to the app, you can ask it what parts are, what each part is, and it will give the name plus a sound effect. It will help you to complete the model, and you can also add your own labels. There's quite a few things you can do with it, so I'll have that set up. I also have from a second year PhD student, Maduka Da Silva, who is working on accessible dance for people who are blind or low vision, and she has been running work design workshops, body storming, which is the equivalent of brainstorming but using your body. And we've got just a little haptic buzzer that the dance teachers can use to provide subtle feedback to the dancer during a group class. The rest of the table is my stuff, and I've just handed in my PhD, so I'm trying to summarize probably 6 years of work in 6 minutes here. But I was focusing on the use of 3D printing for blindness, for blind and low vision people, with an emphasis on mapping and education. So some of the materials that I have there are maps used for learning about space and place, but also for learning about orientation mobility. There's also a lot of education materials, so encouraging tactile literacy. There's some braille letter tiles. I'll mention all the braille stuff. There's some a braille boggle game, for example, and exploring with things like how to join materials. So there's some magnetic pieces that flip together. Hopefully what you'll notice is that a lot of the models are not just a static item, but rather a set that people can manipulate and use to create their own meaning and have active learning, which I think is one of the big advantages of 3D printing over tactile graphics, for example. And you can create things that are sturdy and can be manipulated more in more interesting ways. There was two outcomes of the research that I've wanted to highlight. So one was in terms of the mapping. We've done a number of maps for events and public spaces, and we started putting 3D icons onto those maps because it's always been very tricky to have a variety of icons on tactile graphics because there's only a certain number of shapes that you can tell apart. But having that third dimension gives you a lot more information. And so we have found that we're able to provide icons that people can recognise straight away, or if not straight away, look at the key once and then remember it over time as well. We've developed icons for parks and playgrounds and shopping centres, and we've also developed guidelines on how to develop icons for further use cases. So I'd love for people to have a look at those and think about using them on your own maps in future. All of them models are available for free download on Thingiverse, so that's my little plug for that one. And the other thing I wanted to talk about was the support for adoption of 3D printing. So the work was done as part of a linkage project in partnership with a number of organisations in Australia, and in order to support the adoption. There's one thing that's missing from my head right now, but I'll check my notes in a second. The one that was missing was that we have a Australia-New Zealand Accessible Graphics Group, which I chair. We have monthly meetings of people interested in 3D printing for blind low vision education, and those happen on Zoom. So they've been really instrumental in getting people's knowledge up and sharing materials. I love every meeting we talk about what we've made in the last month, and there's always someone who says that they printed something that somebody else shared at the last meeting, or that they've implemented a fix that someone else suggested to them. So let me know if you're interested in joining that, and I have already hunted down a few people to come along as guest speakers at the future meetings. And the other thing that we've done is to develop 3D printing guidelines, which have just been launched through the Roundtable on Information Access, which is an Australia-New Zealand organisation. The full guidelines will be published on the website within the next month, but we already have partial guidelines up on the website at printdisability.org. And I guess it covers all aspects. So should I 3D print? What should I 3D print? How do I find the models? How do I make my own? How do I do the printing? How do I do the finishing? So adding extra things onto the 3D print. What things does an organisation need to do in order to support the adoption of 3D printing? So, I've got heaps to show you and tell you about, and please do come have a look. Thank you.
Thank you, Leona. That's very exciting. HumanWare, who's here from HumanWare? Anyone? Yes, someone.
Mars.
Ah, very good. Thank you.
Sorry. Good morning, everyone. My name's Maurice Sloan from Humanware, or representing Humanware, I should say. I'm probably one of the original old founders of Humanware in the sense that I've been associated with the company for 40 years now, and one of the last standing in a sense of the original people that were involved. It's most of you probably know Humanware originally started out in New Zealand, and in 2009 the head office was transferred over to Canada, and subsequent to that date all the product development and manufacturing side of it has been coordinated through the Canadian office. So today, Mary said, you know, come, but make sure what you bring is Braille. So everyone's got to do what Mary says. So I've only bought Braille. So I've got a 40-cell Braille display, what they're called the BIX 40 series. I've got a Mantis, which is the APH device, the QWERTY keyboard with the 40 cells. I've got the 20-cell unit, which is in various forms around the world. Just as an aside, Humanware have been working quite closely with APH over the last few years, and the range of Braille products that Humanware now have are sort of an offshoot of what was developed in association with the partnership with APH. So our 20-cell Braille display, which is known as the BIX20, is the same as physically as the Chameleon, and I think there's an e-reader that the National Library Service in America distribute, and that's the same physical hardware again. They have different firmware depending on the things. But yes, so that partnership is important because it is a small market and there's a very high development cost, so just to get the numbers up and to be able to keep developing and provide things for the future, that partnership is very important. One of the nice things I think about the Humanware products is that there's quite a consistency between how they all operate in terms of their human interface side of it, and there's quite a connection from the very first talking products that were developed way back in the 1980s. And young Clive hiding in the corner here, he was instrumental in working with the engineers at that time to develop the actual basic structure of what's now become known as Keysoft, which is the suite of programs that run on the various products that Humanware make. So we sort of have Keysoft is still in the BrailleNote Touch products, and then there's Keysoft Lite, which is a lighter version of it with less features that are featured in the Braille displays. On the other side, I haven't got these today, but I don't know, it's probably about 5 years ago now, Humanware took over Enabling Technologies, and they released two new printers, the Romeo 60 and the Juliet 120. Some people probably know, others probably don't, but they are essentially an index printer out of Sweden with a different colour paint and a different firmware and a different label, but they are made by Index. And those products are very well engineered and very reliable. And so, there's a good base of product out there through what Index themselves sell under the Index brand and what goes out under the Enabling Technology brand. So that's probably quickly all I need to say, and I've got four different Braille displays here, so if people want to have a bit of a hands-on and get a feel for what's there, please come and see. Thank you.
These guys are being very well behaved.
Very, very well behaved. Thank you so much. Pacific Vision, Mr. Skilton, I think. Hello, is someone coming? Move loudly. Is someone here from Pacific Vision?
Yes.
Ah, oh. Okay. Ah, hello.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I just. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name's Laurelie and I'm from Pacific Vision. This is all a bit new for me. I'm not that au fait on Braille equipment. Michael from HIMSS was supposed to come and support this presentation, but unfortunately he couldn't make it. So I've been very lucky to rope in Scott Erickson to give me a hand. Bless him. Thank you, Scott. Anyway, I've bought some equipment today, the BrailleSense 6, which is a note taker from HIMSS. It's a really powerful note taker. We sell a lot of them to Blends, which is really good, and it sort of replaces the computer, your laptop or whatever. I've also bought the new Braille eMotion from HIMSS, which is a 40-cell Braille display. We've only just got it last week, so I've bought it, but haven't really had a chance to have a go on it because we're a bit short-staffed at the moment. So, yeah, with me here, there's not much happening in the office. So, there's also a mini BrailleSense 6 20-cell mini as well that's here, and I believe Scott bought a couple of other things. So we'll just have them on display, and that'll be really good. I don't really know what else to say, but I'm happy to... Do you want to come up, Scott, and say some things? I'd really appreciate it. Thanks. Throwing in the deep end.
I'm a bit taller, so I had to adjust the mic height. That's okay. So, I've got the eMotion. I was handing it around to a couple of people who were lucky enough to see it the other day. I've also got the BrailleSense Mini, the 6 Mini as well. That's all I've got with me. I had to actually pack, clothes. But look, I think, it's quite a nice display. It's got some note-taking functionality. It's got speech for those who, particularly for those people who want to learn, who are obviously learning Braille, you can back it up with speech. It's got, for those who have the BrailleSense, it's got the notepad from the BrailleSense, it's got the document reader from the BrailleSense, it's got the Daisy player from the BrailleSense, and for a bit of a geeky moment, you can actually connect stereo interfaces to it for recording, like a Zoom H6 or, one of those lovely Shure MV88 Plus microphones to it. So I'll give mine to Lorelei, and you can have a play with it. Mine will be the one that's turned off because it's mine. But no, I'll leave it on, and I'll give her the mini as well, so you can look at both. So I guess that's it. But there you go.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Is Brad Cohen from New Zealand Opera? Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Morena koutou. I hope that you've all got the URL links, which Mary kindly notified everyone about, and I hope that your Wi-Fi connection here is sufficient to get what we're getting. I can see that I'm watching people's headlines, so that's great. I'm going to present Context Live to you, and we're going to be using Context Live for the presentation. This is what you're seeing on your screens or hearing on your readers. So I'll just begin. Thank you for the opportunity to present Context Live to you this morning. Your reader devices are currently displaying my words in real time, although you may want to refresh your pages because I'm not... There we go. Your reader devices are currently displaying my words in real time. I'm broadcasting to everyone in the room and across the globe simultaneously. And the beautiful thing is that this happens without an app, without wires, and without any proprietary technology. It's the core of our solution, and we think it offers a major step forward for accessibility. The following sections of my presentation will broadcast headlines to your devices. So I'll begin with the challenges that we were faced. This was a solution that we actually built during COVID as a lockdown project, and it was for art song, which is usually in foreign languages, French or German, and we wanted people to be able to understand in detail the text of these art songs in real time, translated in a venue. So we first wanted to deliver a solution which was personalized, which was rich beyond current subtitle or surtitling solutions, and we wanted it to be available for live performances. The other important criteria for us that we really wanted to use existing open source technology. We didn't want to build a new app. We didn't want to create new hurdles for access. And we wanted minimal extra overheads. That is, we want everyone to be able to use the devices that you already have instead of having to acquire new hardware. We thought it should be multimodal, which means that it could work on any device with any content. So it should be Android, Apple, Windows, and Mac agnostic. And we thought that there were a number of exciting outputs that we could have for the same content. That is, we thought it could output Braille in some form. We thought it could output audio description, text, obviously, but interestingly, also translation. And by translation, we mean multiple translations simultaneously. That is, the user can choose which translation language they want, and the same content will be pushed according to requirements. Because it was a musical solution, obviously, we wanted also to be able to output images. That might be a music score, or it might be graphic images or photos. And the killer was that we wanted to output timecode aligned video. In fact, everything in the solution is timecode aligned. That is, if you align a text with an image or a video timecode point or a certain position in an audio recording, everything aligns continuously across these platforms. I hope that everyone's experiencing the accuracy of what we're doing in the room. So, for delivery, what we're delighted with, this has been a project in Genesis for about 3.5 years now. We have managed to make it portable to all kinds of existing technology. And the important thing is that we deliver this to your browser over the standard web without any additions. We use a technology called WebSockets, which is what pushes content to devices. So instead of you having to reload your web pages with every new piece of content, we push it to you and you passively receive it. So it's available on mobile devices. It's available on devices like the Brailliant via VoiceOver. And its usefulness is because Opera already has surtitles. Now, Paul Brown asked me yesterday that people were concerned about whether surtitles had anything to do with subtitles. The only thing about surtitles is that they appear above the stage instead of at the foot of the screen. That's the only difference between surtitle and subtitles. They're just a solution in exactly the same way. So we are deploying this already at New Zealand Opera. We had our dress rehearsal of our forthcoming opera Le Contorie, which opens tomorrow night. We had the dress rehearsal yesterday, and Paul was in testing that. The beautiful thing for this solution is that we're serving surtitles for sighted audience members above the stage, but we were also pushing out content via VoiceOver and the Braille HTML page that you're using now to serve Paul with text on his Brailliant in real time. And I haven't spoken to Paul this morning, but I hear that it worked. Which is a huge relief to all of us. I'll talk to you about that later. I think that was a refresh issue. This comes for free, effectively. It's the same investment in content and technology, but these additional pages are just served automatically. We provide both timing and content. And you can use your normal personal environment. The other exciting thing for New Zealand Opera is that traditionally, performances for non-sighted audience members or the deaf have only been available for one show per production period. This technology will enable us to present this at every single performance that we do. So you'll no longer be corralled into having to attend one performance. You can attend whatever performance you like because it's all the same, and we're really excited about that. The other thing that I welcome your views on in the discussions to come after this presentation is that we see obvious exciting applications beyond opera. I know that opera is my world, but I'm also aware that there is a world beyond opera. And some of the solutions that we've talked to Paul and others about is, for instance, surtitles or subtitles for cinema or for events where some kind of movement or live content is involved. The same technology can be used for a wide range of scenarios, and I would really value your suggestions as to how we might take this technology forward. We think it's ready to roll out, and the only challenge for us is which areas to focus on next. We also think that live broadcast subtitling and surtitling might be very interesting for applications going forward. And let me remind you that, of course, if we have multiple language translations, we can serve all of them at the same time. So there's a lot of capacity in this technology. It may be that we're not the first, in which case I do hope you'll let me know. But to us, this seems genuinely new and exciting. In closing, I just want to make some acknowledgements, please. This was delivered by Context Live, which is basically me and my colleague Hugh, who's UK-based. It has been adopted now by New Zealand Opera for their surtitling solutions and for accessibility solutions, beginning with this current production season of Le Contouré. And New Zealand Opera is grateful for the support of the Pelorus Trust and the Four Winds Foundation, both of whom gave us grants to develop the technology specifically for Braille and for audio description. I want to shout out to Paul for his encouragement, support, and testing against the odds on occasion. So Context Live, the link's there. That's me and Hugh. I also represent New Zealand Opera. I'm the general director. And Hugh works for the Electronics and Computer Science Department, University of Southampton. Thank you very much for your time and interest. I look forward to discussions after this.
All right, are there any presenters that I have not called upon? Hearing none. Well, we got through that very quickly. My microphone went off, Clive.
It's on, I think.
Oh, all right. Now it is. It went away for a minute,
yeah,
but it came.
I was talking to Matthew and I turned you down.
Oh. Well, thank you very much. All right. We are ready to go and have a look at everything. Thank you very much. See you back here at 1 o'clock.